The year was 598 BC, and a numb Jeremiah sat at his window watching. He watched King Jehoiakim and all his court officials in chains hauled off to Babylon. He watched through bleary eyes, tears rolling down his cheeks, leaving the mark on the dusty floor where he sat. He saw broken, beaten, embarrassed hostages. Jeremiah had spent his life in Judah between the superpowers of Egypt and Babylon. He had spent his life warning the establishment that their political games were leading to this. He had spent his life calling his people back to faithfulness in God. He had spent his life watching and seeing and knowing, but his heart broke nonetheless. A terrible ending, a long time in the making, exile. And as he sat, he felt an intense pressure. What does this mean for my calling? And he knew the questions that were being asked on the street. How could this happen to us, God's chosen people? How now are we to live? He even heard the unspoken question behind it all. Where is God? Has he been defeated? Today's reading from Jeremiah is set a couple years after that little imagined scene. A few years in which the reality of exile had fully hit home, and those questions had only grown louder and more persistent. And it is this experience of exile that I would suggest the church in 21st century Britain should turn to if we are going to try and understand our situation and the mission that we face. We may not have been conquered by a foreign country, but just as traumatically, many of us have sat at our windows and watched as your home, as the world changed beyond belief. For many Christians, Britain now feels like foreign soil. The church has watched the conquering armies of secularism carry us into exile. Values are different, pews are emptier, and any semblance of cultural or political influence and power has long since disappeared. We are the church of exile. And I don't have time to do that claim full justice. But whether you accept that descriptor or not, I hope that we can all agree that undoubtedly the world has rapidly changed in the last half century. And with it, so is the place and the role of the church. Something has ended and we face a new situation. And yet for all its newness for us, the church in exile faces many of the same questions that the Israelites in Babylon faced all those thousands of years ago. What does it mean to be a minister now? How do we now live as God's chosen people? Where is God in exile? And so, if I think that the questions are similar, it's unsurprising that I have found some of the answers from the prophets of exile, such as Jeremiah. They have helped me discover what it means to be a minister to the church in exile, and although I certainly don't claim to be prophetic, as if one could, I try to allow their example to shape my living, my praying, my ministering as I seek to serve God's church. But perhaps I can sense some of your minds going, wait, hold on a minute, a prophet? How can your ministry be influenced by those weird blokes who receive dramatic visions of the future from God? Aren't they just godly Christian fortune tellers? Okay, so I'm sure that actually none of you are thinking that. But there is something in my cartoon description of a prophet that is really quite popular in the church. We think of prophets as simply people who God supernaturally reveals the future to. But that is to undersell the prophet. That is to misunderstand and underestimate what their task truly is. For prophets, we're not floating up in the clouds, somewhere waiting for the next vision to come along. No, prophets of exile were individuals involved in the mud and the mess of Israel's life, who looked at all that was going on around them honestly, and with the Spirit's guidance, they were able to see things as they truly were. Prophets have a gift to see reality. And through that sight, speak to what will come in the future. They watched and they saw and they knew the reality of their day. And because of that, they would be able to see a reality beyond that day. The prophet is someone who sees the world honestly and who still maintains hope. And it is that double movement of honesty and hope that I try to allow to shape my ministry, my preaching, my pastoral work, my mission work. For the task of a minister in exile is to see the world honestly, yet hopefully. And it is essential that the order of that movement is right. Honesty must always come first. We must always see the world the way it truly is, rather than the way that it was or the way that we want it to be. We see this in verses 8 and 9 of our reading today, where Jeremiah calls out the false prophets who are making a name for themselves, promising the quick downfall of Babylon and immediate return to the promised land for the exiles. They simply aren't looking at the world honestly because they are afraid of its implications. And so they provide false hope. No, we can't rush to hope. To do so denies reality, and it calls into question the validity of our questions. We must look at the church and the world honestly and hear the criticism of God, hear the judgment of God regarding our unfaithfulness to his law and goodness and mercy. We must see how the choices we have made individually and as church more broadly have contributed to our current situation. We must experience that judgment personally and together. For the reality is, exile is a form of judgment. And this is not about trying to burden us with an inordinate amount of guilt or sense of guilt, but the prophets of exile scream that honesty is necessary. And with honesty must come grieving and lament. We must be able to acknowledge pain and sit with it. We live in a world that is increasingly about pain avoidance, that hides death where possible. And at times the church has bought into that. We need to recapture the gifts of grief and lament, for only then will we be comforted. If we are able to see the world true as it truly is, we will find that our imaginations will stretch beyond this current reality. And we will move beyond grief to relief, beyond lament to praise, beyond despair to worship, beyond honesty to hope, beyond terrible endings to new beginnings, beyond death to resurrection. To be a minister of a church in exile involves looking reality full in the face and yet not giving in to despair, but having the Spirit's imagination to see a reality beyond the now and to speak that reality into existence, to energize the church with words of hope. And it is not a cheap hope. Jeremiah reminds us that captivity can last 70 years, by which he meant a lifetime. But if we can sit with it, it is a true and it is an earned hope. It sees and promises that a different world is not just possible, it is coming. And actually, that's the power of exile. For out of grief and soul-searching and loss comes the search for God who is doing a new thing. All the old institutions and sources of power and prosperity and comfort, they're gone. We can't rely on them anymore. Instead, all we are driven to is dependency upon God. And I tell you what, that is a time of creativity and energy and insight. The Babylonian exile shaped the Old Testament. that we have today, more than any other event. May our time of exile drive us searching for our God. For when we do, we find hope. And that is what hope drives and what hope enables. And as anyone who has seen the new Star Wars movie will know, revolutions are built on hope. This passage and the example of the prophets in general has led me to see my role as minister in a time of exile has been about enabling us all to join in this double movement of honesty and hope. To see these movements in our own life and in the life of church together. It is challenging, it is difficult, mistakes are often made, but there is energy and there is creativity here, there is reward here, there is hope here, there is God here. But if that is my task, what about our task? What about together? And so we come to the next question. How do we live now as God's chosen people? How do we do church together in a time of exile? How do we relate to the surrounding dominant culture? Well, again, I think this passage in Jeremiah provides us with an answer which has been described in other places as faithful presence. The mission of the church in exile is to be faithfully present to the surrounding culture. This means that we are to build and plant and eat and marry in this city in which we are located. We are to make it not our location, but our home. We are not to give in to temptation to cut ourselves off, to retreat into our own little private corner, our buildings, our houses, with our own little subculture, our own music, our own movies, our own stories. To live this way is just another way of avoiding being honest, to avoid the reality of exile, to pretend that nothing has changed. And the prophets won't allow us to do this. We must live honestly, even if it brings some grief and some lament. The call of the church is to be faithfully present to where it is placed. It is to make our home in exile. We must seek to know our neighbors and our neighborhood. We must seek to grow deep roots in a specific location. And this really isn't easy, probably at any time, but particularly in the 21st century. For we aren't tied to a single location in the same way that humanity has been for most of its existence. Families now are scattered throughout the country and actually probably beyond that, scattered throughout the world. Modern transport means we can cross that world in the matter of hours. We live so much of our lives online. We live disconnected from our physical location, floating above it rather than with our feet planted on it. It's hard for us to feel at home in a location. And I imagine, though I speak without really knowing, but in a commuter town like St. Albans, that problem is even more acute. And that disconnection actually presents the church with an opportunity, for we can bring a sense of home and a sense of community in a time where it is desperately lacking. But it requires us not to retreat, but to be present to our town and its culture. It requires us not to hide, but to get out and build and plant and eat and marry. And that takes a surprising amount of energy and courage. But it is the calling that God places on a church in a time of exile. And actually, the calling goes beyond that, as difficult as it might be, because we're not just to make our home in exile. The mission of the church in exile is to seek the peace and prosperity of that place. It's to seek the shalom of the place where you're called. And that's a really radical calling that Jeremiah outlines. It's a lovely verse. We use it quite often, you know, seek the peace and prosperity. But Israel was told to work for the peace and prosperity of the people who had just conquered them, who had just ripped them from their homes, who had killed friends and family. And Jeremiah calls Israel to bless them. My experience of the church is that quite a lot of us are a wee bit angry at the surrounding culture. Some of us might be hurt by it. Quite a lot of us are afraid of it. But it just simply doesn't matter. It is our calling and our job to get over it. For the calling of God's people in exile is to be faithfully present to that place and to seek its peace and prosperity. This is the time and place that God has called us to. We have to ask, where is God at work in our neighborhood? Where is God at work outside of the walls of this of your house and this church? Where can you work together to bless St. Albans, to seek its shalom? You won't be able to do everything, but what can we do? That is how the church in exile must live. And again, it is a place of creativity and energy and mistakes. It's a place of hope. And if we're to accomplish that mission, we need the message of verses 10 to 14, which calls us back to God for being faithfully present to the city where we are placed in. Being faithfully present in exile requires us to turn to God, to go to God, to call on God, to pray to God, above all, to worship God. If we are to live in the world, if we are to be present to the culture and location of exile, there is a risk that it will stretch us. Well, it certainly will stretch us. There is a risk that it will change us. Some of that will be okay, and some of that will seek discernment and wisdom. And the only way that we have that is when we turn to God and search for him and search for what God is doing. We live in the world, but exile demands that we are dependent upon God, that we remember that our identity is not as citizens of exile, not as citizens of Britain, not as citizens of St. Albans, but citizens of God's kingdom, living in a location where we've been placed. It's only by worshiping God together that we are able to remain grounded and orientated, ensuring that we remain faithful as well as present. It requires wisdom. It requires discernment. But it's our calling. It is our challenge. And can we seek to bless the city to where we're called, even if it doesn't seem to gain us anything? But of course, it's one thing to say that we need to turn to God. But exile is not the easiest place to say that. For one of the questions that exile always presents is, where on earth is God? Has he been defeated? As Nietzsche said 100-odd years ago, is God dead? Israel experienced the destroyed temple, the monarchy in chains, the promised land, a distant memory, and they asked, where is God? We are experiencing changed values, three quarter empty churches, a loss of power and influence, and we ask, where is God? How can we turn to and worship this God? How can we seek him if we're not even sure where he is, if he's there at all? These are honest questions for a time of exile. And we should allow these doubts to be expressed in church. We must sit with those sort of questions to experience the grief and the lament behind them. The church has been afraid of those type of questions for far too long, just pretending that they aren't there. The minister in exile must not just listen to these questions, but at points articulate them. For it is only through that honesty that we will be able to see beyond our current reality, to see the hope. That's what the prophets of exile did. That's what they do. And as they wrestled with those questions, they rediscovered in a new and powerful way a truth spoke first at the burning bush. When Moses asked God, God, what is your name? And was told, I am who I am. I will be who I will be. It was exile that led the prophets to rediscover the power and the truth of this statement. Israel didn't own God. Israel and its institutions did not control God. God will be who he will be. Our God is free. I think the church could probably do with rediscovering that message too. Where is God in exile? Wherever he chooses to be. When we accept that, exile can expand our imaginations again to see where God might be at work in the world around us, not just in our midst. Through grief and lament, we're able to see where this world is broken, and we have the hope to see where God is working to fix the brokenness, in the midst of the brokenness. Jeremiah is able to see Yahweh at work through Babylon, in Babylon, and ultimately in the downfall of Babylon. A long way from the temple on all accounts. Now, I don't believe that God is the ultimate puppet master up in heaven pulling all of the strings down here on creation. But exile must teach us that we certainly aren't God's puppet master either. God is at work outside our walls in the neighborhood, working for the redemption of all things in strange and beautiful ways. Exile helps us to see and appreciate this. The decline of the church does not mean that God is dead, but it should remind us that God is free. Exile should grow our imagination to see beyond the grief and the lament of exile to a new reality, to see the Spirit of God at work and join him. Where is God in exile? Where he always chooses to be, grieving the terrible ending of things and bringing about something new. God is being crucified and resurrected. God is working his plans to prosper us, not to harm us. God is working for the redemption of all things. Will we who live in a time of exile, will we open our minds and our hearts to see God at work in strange and surprising ways? Because believe it or not, exile is a gift to us. The judgment of God is a gift to us. I've said it a few times, exile can expand our imaginations. It can fill us with hope and joy and creativity and energy. It allows us to see things as they truly are, to grieve and lament and repent. And when we do, we discover hope. We discover a future. We discover a mission. We discover God. I'm going to lead us in a time of prayer now, a time of intercessions. And obviously, I don't know the needs of this congregation. We're going to pray for them tonight more specifically, but I'm going to leave some space at points for people to pray in the quiet of their own hearts. Or if you want, certainly pray out for the needs of this congregation and for the needs of St. Albans and the world around us. I'll guide you through it, don't worry. But we'll have a few bits of silence throughout these prayers as we intercede for this world where our God is free and our God is at work. We're going to ask God to reveal himself to us. So let us pray. God of life in all its fullness, in Jesus you come to give life and not to destroy it. You call us to be part of your healing, to make peace, pursue justice, and love mercy, to bear witness to Christ, anticipating the day when tears are wiped away, death, mourning, crying, and pain are no more, and you are at home among all people. God who dwells within us, move afresh in our lives and neighborhood. And in a moment of silence or pray out loud, I invite you to pray for yourself, to bring your needs and desires before God, inviting him into your life and your situations.